This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Every day, thousands of people in this country quietly face decisions as agonizing as those made famous in the Terri Schiavo case. Throughout that controversy, all kinds of people, politicians, religious leaders, legal and medical experts, made emphatic statements about the facts and offered even more certain opinions about what should be done. To many people, courts were either ordering Terri's death by starvation or vindicating her constitutional rights. This issue is explored in depth in a new book, If That Ever Happens to Me, Making Life and Death Decisions After Terri Schiavo. Author Lois Shepherd joins me live in studio. She's an associate professor of public health sciences and a professor of law at the University of Virginia. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, I'm delighted to be here.
And I want to say right off the bat, thank you for writing this book.
Thank you.
Really, because I, as I was telling you before we went on, I was one of those people sitting watching that whole thing happen with Terri Schiavo that I just think this is, it's so unseemly, I think, to make this kind of thing a political football. And I was sickened by what was happening to everyone related to her, you know, her husband and her parents. And
right.
It was just sad to see it all happening.
Right. I think that's right. I think a lot of people felt that way. In fact, you know, the political ploys backfired with respect to those who were trying to gain votes by thwarting the removal of her feeding tube. And the American people were really, on the whole, disgusted, I think, with the political involvement. But they also had a lot of questions, which makes the case not just about the politics, but about some of the underlying issues.
Right, because it is so, unless your family has been there, there's so much you just don't know. You know, there's just so much confusing words that we even talk about, and we'll talk about that. Let's start first, if we can, with a Lois Shepherd 101. Just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. I'm recently actually moved to Virginia, to the University of Virginia. I taught health law and bioethics at Florida State University for 15 years before coming here. But that's my area. I am educated as a lawyer, practiced corporate law for 6 years, and then became an academic and kind of stumbled actually into the field of health law. That was not what I practiced, but what became what I was interested in.
Yeah. Do you remember when you realized, hey, I'm really interested in this? I mean, what were you looking at and studying when you knew, I'm going to really pursue this? This is a field that is captivating.
Well, you know, I think it started, a lot of my work has been about the beginning of life and the end of life. And so one of the issues that was starting to be debated and talked about a lot when I got into the field in 1993 was prenatal genetic testing and selecting against disabilities or selecting for eventually, perhaps, whatever anybody wants to select for or against.
Yeah.
So when I started realizing those complex issues that had both a social and a cultural and sometimes maybe unfortunately a political dimension, I couldn't turn back.
Right, right. We're talking with Lois Shepherd of the University of Virginia. Her new book is If That Ever Happens to Me, Making Life and Death Decisions After Terri Schiavo. And we'll be giving away a free copy at the end of the interview, so stay tuned. A free signed copy, I should say. So tell me when you realized, I have a book here. This is a story. We need to go back and really look at this case. Because there's just so much here that people need to understand.
Right. My involvement began actually in 2003 when the Florida legislature passed what's known as Terri's Law. Okay, so Terri Schiavo had a cardiac arrest in 1990, and then she was in a permanent vegetative state, and her husband decided to try to have her feeding tube removed with court approval. And the court decided that, and then the Florida legislature passed a law that allowed the governor, Governor Jeb Bush, to reinsert the feeding tube. And when that happened, even though I hadn't been involved in the case at all, and I don't have any connection actually to what happened in the case, I wrote an editorial to our—I was in Tallahassee. That's where Governor Jeb Bush was. That's where the case was going to be decided. So I wrote an editorial to our local newspaper, criticizing Terry's Law and the appointment, basically, of the governor as her surrogate decision maker. And then that just kind of snowballed. You know, someone said, well, can you develop these thoughts further? And I wrote an article, and then I got invited to do a lot of presentations that required a paper. And so before I knew it, as the case, I followed it very closely between 2003 and 2005. And issue after issue started coming to the fore, right? And so I would write about that. And then eventually I was asked, well, are you writing a book? And I thought, well, I should.
I might as well be.
Pull all this together, right?
We're talking with Lois Shepherd of the University of Virginia. So tell us now, and feel free to talk at length here, what do we learn? What do we need to know, and what do we learn when we look at this very important case of what happened to Terri Schiavo and arguably what happened to America during that time?
Right. Well, some basic things I think we've learned is that politics should stay out of. We have to have laws. So then the laws have to be passed, and the laws have to be passed by politicians. So we can't completely remove politicians from this area, but we need to remove them from specific cases. And that was one of the big problems with the Terri Schiavo cases. The courts had decided, the legislature came in, both the federal and the state, you know, came in and tried to take it back and to change what a court had decided according to the law that existed at the time. So that's one of the things, is to realize what role politics does have and does not have in these kinds of cases. I think one of the things that hasn't gotten adequate attention is the invasion of Terri Schiavo's privacy rights. Although a number of people have commented that, you know, even though we might not have been so clear as sometimes experts seem to say on TV and such about what her wishes were, that everybody could be pretty certain that she wouldn't want that videotape shown over and over of her on TV. So that's another thing, is that we need more attention to respecting people's privacy rights. But another thing I think that the case showed was that the American public hasn't sorted through yet, and maybe we haven't sorted through, what our thoughts are about artificial nutrition and hydration. So a lot of people seem to be surprised, you know, that you could remove feeding tubes in these kind of cases. And lawyers and medical experts at the time, their response seemed to be, look, this was decided a long time ago, which is true. I mean, there's a legal and medical consensus then and today that you can remove artificial nutrition and hydration just as you can remove a ventilator. But some people don't feel it's different. You know, and we kind of haven't worked through all our feelings about that or how we should respond to it.
We're talking with Lois Shepherd, and the phone lines are open if you got a question at 977-1070. The book is If That Ever Happens to Me, Making Life and Death Decisions After Terri Schiavo. Lois, do Americans have a constitutional right to die? What do the courts have to say about this?
That's a good question. I'm a little hesitant on saying that there's a strong federal constitutional right to, we don't even want to say die, we want to say right to refuse treatment, even right. If it would cause death.
Because, to decide your own fate, right. If you are fatally, you know,
right.
Really,
well,
really ill.
I mean, it's pretty clear that the Supreme Court has said that there's not a constitutional right to physician aid in hastening death. You know, so that would be like a prescription. Like you can get an organ in Washington now. If you're terminally ill, you can get a prescription to hasten your death. So that's clear. So if we don't probably want to use the term right to die because that's too expansive. Some people will say that will include physician aid in hastening death instead of just refusing treatment. Now, with respect to the right to refuse treatment, there have been a lot of state court decisions that have very clearly said that there's a right to refuse treatment. Actually, at the Supreme Court level, at the federal level, the main decision is the Cruzan decision, and it's not as clear as we'd like it to be, I'd say. For those of us who think there should be a right, a federal constitutional right to refuse treatment, it's not quite as clear, because the thing was they upheld the state of Missouri's right to insist on a very high standard of evidence before Nancy Cruzan's feeding tube could be removed. So they actually upheld the state law, so they didn't have to decide, was there a constitutional right?
Yeah. One of the things you really spell out in your book that I appreciated was There's really no simple answers to this. And as much as political sides, left and right, like simple answers because it's good for television and it gets votes, when it comes to this really agonizing family decision, there really are no simple answers.
I think that's right. And one of the things that was very disturbing while the Schiavo case was being played over and over on cable news were kind of the labels that were put on things. So calling the removal of her feeding tube, you know, starvation, when, I mean, even technically that's not right, which is because she was going to die from dehydration and not from starvation. But that gave a sense of she was going to feel that, right? That starvation is this terrible thing. And you'd have politicians who would talk about, you know, people crossing the desert, you know, and being dehydrated to death because they don't have water. And that's a very different experience than someone like Terri Schiavo, who couldn't experience anything. I mean, that's what a permanent vegetative state is you, there's no consciousness and there's no hope of any consciousness in the future. And that, I think, was also something that came about with the cases. I think a lot of people didn't really understand what a permanent vegetative state is. And they were surprised when you saw the videos because Terri maybe didn't look like people thought she would look like. I mean, she, you know, had some movement. Her eyes were open. So there, you know, that I think was something, again, that in my field we assume, I think, that everybody's very comfortable with these facts and knows them. And then you have a big case like this and there's kind of surprise.
Yeah. So explain a vegetative state to us and why she could look like that on television. Because I saw her and I remember thinking, well, goodness gracious, she looks like she's looking at people in the room.
Right, right. Well, one of the things we have to understand is that the videotape was very deceptive because it was pulled from like 4.5 hours of videotaping. And so certain seconds could be taken where there was simply a correlation between something happening in the room and what her body was doing. And so it could appear that she was smiling at her mother, right?
Right.
Or it could appear that her eyes were tracking the balloon across the room. But in reality, she had no, and the autopsy even showed this, was that she couldn't see, you know. So, you know, and clinical observation had by many experts had already determined that without kind of being able to see from the autopsy that in fact physically it was impossible too, was that she had no consciousness. So people in a vegetative state, they just have no awareness of themselves or the environment at all. So they can't really hear, they can't feel pain, so she couldn't feel the whatever might have happened to a normal person if their feeding tube was removed, right?
Yeah.
To
so
a
she wouldn't person. She wouldn't feel thirst or hunger,
right? Exactly. And one of the arguments I make in the book is that for this unique condition, where someone has no experience and no possibility of experiencing any consciousness in the future, that we should change the presumption. The presumption in law now is that you have to show this is that they'd want the feeding tube removed. The person would want the feeding tube removed. And, you know, a lot of times we don't have good evidence of what a person wanted. You know, people don't have those conversations necessarily or nail it down.
Not everybody has a living will when tragic happens to them.
That's right. Or have even discussed it, right, with others. And so if you don't have that kind of evidence, though, you're kind of held in this limbo. You know, you'll have to be on a feeding tube, you know, unless it varies. State law, you know, varies. But in Florida, it's a pretty high standard. You have to have clear and convincing evidence that this is what the person would have wanted. I argue in the book that for this unique condition, we should change that presumption so that after a certain period of time where permanence is very clear so that amount of time plus more, you know, like maybe 2 years, then we change the presumption and that the feeding tube will be removed unless there's evidence that this is what the person would have wanted. So kind of changing what
the default is.
So change
the burden of proof there.
That's exactly right. And change the default. And that's because for people in this unique situation, they don't have any present interest in being alive. And so we're just keeping them alive for us. You know, for their parents or for spouses or for society at large because we're wrestling with these moral principles, but which we're not doing it for them.
Right. We're keeping them alive for us, which, as far as I'm concerned, is quite unseemly.
Right. Well, to me, it's an ultimate lack of respect for a person.
You mentioned, we're talking with Lois Shepherd of the University of Virginia. You mentioned, Terry, that video of Terry on cable news. Talk about the role of the media in that whole thing, because we all know this could happen again tomorrow, I mean, in America, with the way the media works.
Right. Well, you know, I think part of it is that you want, there was this emphasis on not having these nice, long, extended conversations, but more sound bites. And so the whole issue became a, kind of a right to die versus a right to life, or a right to choose, maybe if you don't want to use the term right to die, a right to choose versus, you know, the right to life. And it really became, it's really much more complicated than that. With respect to the right to choose, the assumption then for those people who were just, you know, they had just a few seconds, and that's the point they wanted to make, they'd say, they'd act like the evidence had been very good, that this was Terry's choice. You know, but when you go back and you read the whole trial transcript, and you see what evidence was before the court, it was really pretty weak. I mean, there was kind of a thumb on the scale in favor of removing the feeding tube, whether that was deference to Michael Schiavo, the surrogate, or, you know, a sense on the part of the judge that the presumption should be like the way I'm arguing it should be or not. Yeah. And then with respect to the side of life, it got wrapped up in the whole abortion politics, because this seemed to be an easy way to kind of bolster, if you were a conservative politician or a conservative commentator, to bolster your conservative credentials in another setting, not just the abortion setting, but in this, you know, end of life setting.
Sure, sure. To beat that drum.
Yes.
Yeah.
There was a lot of drum beating.
Yeah, indeed. Let me ask you this just to wrap up. What is it you think that Americans don't know or don't appreciate about this whole issue?
Well, I'd say a couple of things. One is I think people are surprised to learn how many people are alive in a permanent vegetative state. There are like 30,000 people.
You're kidding.
No.
30,000?
Yeah. In the United States.
Wow.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah. And right. So one of my questions is, who are they kept alive for? And why? Does the law, because the law is requiring so much evidence, is it making families feel like it's morally wrong? Is one question I have. We don't have the answer to that question.
Yeah.
We don't know. We don't have research on that. At the same time, a lot of them die when they do die because of a simple infection that could be cured by antibiotics. So people are more comfortable, surrogates or family members are more comfortable saying no to an antibiotic, simple antibiotic, like penicillin, than they are to removing a feeding tube.
Interesting.
And I'd say the last thing is that feeding tubes sometimes can be more burdensome to patients, not necessarily to Terry Schiavo because she couldn't experience anything, but to some patients, feeding tubes can, without actually extending life, cause that extension of life to be more painful and full of suffering because the body is shutting down, right, and doesn't need this influx of food, you know, and can't handle it. And so that's something I think people don't understand either, is that feeding tubes aren't always 100% beneficial.
To the body.
Yeah, to the body.
Lois Shepherd is with the University of Virginia. Her new book is If That Ever Happens to Me, Making Life and Death Decisions After Terry Schiavo. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
I've really enjoyed it.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit cvillepodcast.com for more.